WFF with Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green, it's Monday the 8th of February and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we didn't get the Six Nations start we had hoped for, but at least we've Ron Nogara with us today. And besides, the weekend wasn't all that bad.
Courtney Laws is smashed by three Scotsmen. It's been that all day and it's come loose and Hamish Watson belted into the sand and that is it. And 38 years of hurt are over for Scottish rugby.
You're right, Donners. The Dublin Racing Festival was fantastic. At least it was Irish horses that were winning. We didn't have to highlight the Scottish winning. But it was a poor weekend for United and Liverpool. So we'll ask Stephen Kelly, is the title race over?
To meet up in bad champions. You can be beaten in a game. There's a way to get beaten. We spoke about there'd be some sort of drop-off or... But they're playing for a big team in Liverpool. It's as if they won the league last year. They've all got a bit carried away and they've all believed their own hype as if they're going to be teams. But in my mindset, when you won a league title, your next challenge was always, can we do it again?
He's been waiting a long time to have that dig, I think. We'll try find positives when we discuss our weekend sporting highlights. We've the latest as Daniel Kinahan tells Talk Sport he has no criminal links. Plus, we've a Fitbit and other goodies to give away thanks to Green Farm.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game on 2FM. Marie and Ruby will get straight into it because we're delighted to be joined by Ireland's record point scorer, Ron Nogara. How are you?
Donners, how are you doing?
We're very good. Ruby touched on it there. Rog, what was your highlight of the weekend? Ken Boy appreciated or monkfish?
My highlight was a 6-hour bus trip to Paris, up and back. It was pretty good trying to watch a game and then the Wi-Fi
tell
not
the truth,
working.
You were watching racing TV on your phone all the way up and all the way back, and that's where you
racing
got hit by 4 points.
Racing UK, watching my hero Ruby. No, I stopped watching you 10 years ago, so I'm still admired, yeah, as you know. But it was a great weekend of sport. Scotland were very, very, very interesting. The only surprise was 5 points in the end. They deserved to beat them by more, but. It just shows when people buy into a game plan, anything can happen. So it was a great weekend of sport, yeah, and Ruby Stable wiped the boards again, but nothing new there. And Liverpool lost, so pretty average weekend. My team lost, Liverpool lost, Ireland lost, so...
Okay. Easy, Victor Meldrew, you'll drag us right down here.
Fingers and spaghetti hoops for dinner.
Rog, we'll get to the Six Nations, but just your own game. You had the opportunity to go top of the table. Tough place to go, Racing. We know Dunnacha Ryan, Mike Prendergast and Zeebs there. Disappointed with the game?
Disappointed with the result. Absolutely... happy with the performance. Sounds bizarre, don't it? We scored 4 tries, they scored 2. We gave away 17 points, kind of overthrow lineouts, you know, which one of them happening in a game, you'd be disappointed. The 2 of them happening, it's, I don't know what the word is, but you don't get better by blaming fellas.
Unacceptable is the word you're looking for.
Unacceptable, yeah, but we need solutions, don't we, Ruby? So it's just a case of... yeah, if you show the way we attacked and sharpen up one or two things, we could go places. So that's the obvious intent. But bonus point, defeat isn't what you're looking for, and we bottled it trying to go top. So that's all right. We'll get another crack, hopefully.
Some calibre though in that competition. You look at Toulouse and the quality they have. It's a brilliant league and a brilliant place for you to be cutting your teeth. Well,
yeah, it
cutting
is.
Your teeth's
only-
done.
Yeah, it is. But when you're, yeah, it's, I suppose it all depends. You know, Ruby got to see it when he was whatever champion jockey in England and Ireland. And when you leave, you see things a little bit differently. And I had no appreciation of the history involved and something that's gone on for over 100 years. So there's massive history in winning the Bouclier. And it is a marathon of a league. And people would say the standard isn't great, but it is good. And it gets better for the phase finale that they call them. And it's about managing people for 10 months of the year, you know, and they're there. Well, there's not much intensity in it, but there is relegation, and once relegation's involved, it impacts hugely. But that new stadium in Paris or something else, the vision of Jackie Lorenzetti to build that. And, you know, it's basically like we've played six games. Our last six games have been in the peeing rain, as we say in Ireland. And then you go into a place where it's like a disco and a better surface than a fast dance floor for grease lightning moves like you, Donica. So we played ball yesterday and we passed the ball well and we accelerated our game at times, but we just gave up stupid points. But you can live with that because you're hopeful that good teams don't make stupid mistakes 2 weeks in a row.
Ronan, you said when you leave you look at things differently. Do you look at Irish rugby differently?
I do, yeah. Very, very differently, yeah. Absolutely. And I would have always probably, the minute, you know, it's normal for everyone when you're in that bubble, you have to look at it differently. But the minute you leave the bubble, you look at it very differently as well. And even though there was external influences like a Tupoki for me or a Dougie Howlett, you know, at times I think you get wiser when you get a bit older, but you'd love if you could have respected that knowledge and even a little bit more when they were here, and it could have made you a better player. I'm sure it would have made you a better player, and but there's still a chance to heed what they say. And I would look upon it very differently. It's the competition, I suppose, and strength and depth is something that Irish rugby will have to look at, because with the only the four teams, it has worked so far to this point. But like everything else, Marie, everyone's getting better, and if you don't change and you don't adapt, you'll get caught. So like, if there's exceptional players playing wherever they are, and they are Irish, then it's something that probably they're going to have to look at.
So you think that policy needs to change of only selecting?
Change, I don't know, but I think it should always be open to review depending on who you are, for example, because if Tadhg Furlong wanted a lifestyle change and he wanted to play, for example, there was a top club in Spain or wherever, who's to say, or what's wrong with Tadhg Furlong playing for Ireland?
You work for Johnny Sexton.
If Tadhg Furlong's playing in Spain, we're all in trouble, lads.
But Donegal, you don't agree with that, do you, though? You think it should be...
I do believe the player welfare bubble allows us to get these guys out. I don't think we have the depth in certain places as a kind of result of maybe not having, you know, players playing overseas. But I definitely know from being abroad that you're well looked after within the Irish system to peak come Six Nations and... Well, unfortunately, World Cup times. But yeah, look, I think there is individuals. I think it'll, as Rog's saying there, it's probably worth constantly keeping a lookout at. Is there enough talent? But Rog, I think the big interesting one is probably, and you spoke of in the Irish Examiner about Jack Crowley, that wave of young fellas that probably aren't getting enough game time because, unfortunately, at the moment, we don't even have AIL.
Yeah, it's exactly the case because... There's four teams and the coaches need instant kind of results, so they're going to pick their strongest 10 nearly every week, and the step up from the Pro 14 to Test Rugby is too big a gap. I'm convinced that it's not anywhere to test a guy if you want to see him play in the Test arena. And then now that we'd obviously with COVID and a lot of the European games being cancelled, that's, you know what I mean, it's gone against Irish teams now because they don't have a strong championship domestically to play in. And it is different times we're in now, and it's only applied, and up to now it has been very good. But I think you always have to be kind of reviewing things and probably be proactive as opposed to reactive and wondering what's around the next corner, what's the potential threat coming forward.
So would you say that was the reason Ireland underperformed at the weekend? But then again, with the exception of Finn Russell and maybe one or two others, most of the Welsh players are in the same boat.
No, because Ruby, I think it's nearly a different game, Test Rugby. I don't think Ireland, probably performance-wise, I watched the game, well, I'm up to kind of the 50th minute and I've seen, I thought Ireland were good, you know, considering you lose a guy after 13 minutes, it completely changes a lot of things. Okay, so Ireland still had match point in the 84th minute with a kick to the corner that didn't go right, but before that they had probably had shown different attacking threats than I hadn't seen up to yesterday, and that gives me, I suppose, optimism going forward. While they be disappointed, will be with a few decision making and skill execution, i.e. Ringrose kicked the ball out deep outside his own 22 at one stage, which is very uncharacteristic. Keith Durrell's knocked on a ball off a bad box kick from Wales with a counter attack opportunity. Johnny Sexton had a kick charge down. Johnny Sexton had a high tackle, which is 3 points. We contested a ruck. Whether it's a ruck or a tackle, it's in front of the post. It's Lee Halfpenny territory. You don't do that. It's 6-0 to Wales. Then they come back from 6-0 down with 13 men to go, 13-6 up at half time. They'll be bouncing into the changing room and their control of the game. Yet Wales were always going to have a purple patch. They had the purple patch in Ireland. You know, Van der Flea had a ball reefed off him, which was probably the only, I suppose, dot on his copybook having a fine afternoon. So they nearly created a memorable afternoon for themselves in Wales. But the flip side of that, Ruby, is Wales with confidence and without confidence is like a it's like an old mini Liverpool to a Mercedes. So they, you know, they're not on top of their game or anywhere near it, but they are strong at home. But you could see that they were struggling even against 14 men to implement any kind of tempo in their game.
So when Pete got sent off and Ireland couldn't kick the ball as much and had to keep the ball a bit more, they played better. So would that be the way forward for Ireland?
Well, how would you make that out, that they have to kick the ball less if a guy goes off?
Well, they have less to chase the ball. So when you have to cover more ground, when you keep the ball, you have to do less running. That would be my understanding of any game. If you keep the ball, you're passing it into rucks. If you're kicking and chasing and kicking and chasing and kicking and chasing, you need all 15 men.
Yeah, but you look at Hogg's kick against England. He didn't need anyone to chase it because he nailed the skill.
Yeah, but we haven't nailed that skill since you left.
Don't give him a big head now, Ruby. He'll start.
Well, he was good on Monkfish too over the weekend, wasn't he?
Rog, just from a coaching point of view there, right, when it's high error rate, you know what I mean, when there are individual errors, like, what do you do there to kind of, you know, get everything back on side? Because, you know, there is frustration. I suppose people outside now will look at individuals as opposed to looking at the kind of system and what needs improving.
This is a question for Mary. This is in her area of expertise. It's very interesting, but I think which was brilliant in the Crusaders was watching their kind of that reset button, the kind of mental approach in terms of breathing techniques, connecting the nonverbal communication, eyes connecting, because as a coach, that's something you can very much live with, is a skill set error, because they don't want to make errors, Donica. They do not want to make errors. Okay, the thing that really worries you as a coach is that if it's a mindset. So if their energy or motivation or body language or areas like that are being shown to the opposition, you know, so that's why you know what I mean, you never let guys put their hands on their knees, you never kind of show when you're absolutely hanging, that just doesn't work. But like, the time when it comes to skill set is that you just have to you know what I mean, you can train that in terms of, okay, you know what I mean, next role, next ball mentality, but also there's a time for you kind of have a banker play in your kind of locker about, okay, well, if we're under the pump or they're having a purple patch, this is our go to play. And you probably have one off a left-hand side, you probably have one off a right-hand side, but everyone kind of knows their role. And it essentially just kind of, it's like a reset play where, okay, I get a touch, I'm back in the game, I'm feeling good about myself again. But what was your question? Did I answer it?
No, you did. It's just having a process for the error. You know, like I remember even just personal one for me with Gerry Hussey was, I had to dust it down and leave it there and park it instead of bringing it with me. Rog,
but the other side of that too, if you're digging too deep, then you're already thinking about it. Stop thinking negatively.
Yeah.
You know, get my hands on the ball. You know, if you think it was, because that was interesting. I said for years, and Mike, not years, but months, don't dip. Was something about kicking. Sure, if you don't dip, you're always going to dip. The brain works like that. It's very, very, you know, stay tall is the positive language. Don't dip is, what does the Langer from Cork do? He dips.
From a coaching point of view at the moment, Rog, how are you coaching the breakdown? Like, we saw Pete's red card, and it is a red card at the moment, but we've been under plenty of nets where that was seen as perfect technique on a clean out. That, thankfully, has gone out of the game now. How do you coach the breakdown?
This is one now for Ruby for 3 hours in his slippers and his pipe. Ruby, this is one for... okay, because this is fascinating for me. So live in play, okay, from Wayne Barnes, the referee, who's one of the best in the world, very approachable, has a great demeanour, okay. It's a clean out. It's totally acceptable, and it's completely unavoidable, was his language live. Okay, yeah. The game goes on. 40 seconds later, he gets a word in his ear from his TMO. You need to have a look at this, Wayne. And then all of a sudden, he's looking at stills, and one of the images is very nasty because it's a blow to the head. There isn't force. I think he is in control of his body. I don't think it's reckless. He is arriving at speed, and there is foul play. So it is a red card, but it's a dangerous precedent, I think, for rugby around clean-outs, where you could potentially have up to 10 of them every game. But the only difference in this time is that there was a face involved, but there was no force to the face, but you still hit the face. So everyone knows from coaching and from referees' meetings and from briefings throughout the week on discipline that shot to the face is a red card. But it's very, very difficult, as you know, Dunica, from playing that position a lot in second row for a clean out. Francis normally would have his backside facing the ceiling, but he kind of twisted from Johnny's clean out in mid-flight to turn around to reveal his face, and it was just like people were like, "Oh, he went to do him in the face." I would say, and it's nothing to do, because you don't comment about people's personalities or his intent. He's coming in with a job, like as a back row to clean out the ruck. He's expecting him to fall consistently like a sack of potatoes to keep that way, but he's twisted, he's brought his face in, and you can't pause live sport. Bang, he's got him.
Yeah, same for me there, Rog. When you practice it, it was winning the space to the window. So that's what I think Pete is trying to do there. He's trying to beat Thomas Francis to that spot. Unfortunately, his head is there, and it is a red card. We've all seen that now. But the one I'm probably concerned about is the moment with Johnny Williams on Gary Ringrose. Is there a reward now for a player like Gary Ringrose to stay down and get him, you know what I mean? Are we going down the road of, you know, if Gary stays in the ground there, he goes to the bin for maybe 10 minutes, if not a red, and we have our rugby players?
Yeah, there's probably 2 points in that for me. I think what's disappointing is the lack of consistency, and that's all players and probably coaches look for. I don't think that's a red card. I think it's a yellow card, but I think it should also be, why wasn't that brought to the attention of the match day referee? It's all over all the big screens. It's there. It can be shown, and it can be even shown 60 seconds later. But that's what frustrates people, because it's not a consistent policy throughout the 80 minutes, and it's incredibly difficult for Wayne Barnes. But that's why we have a TMO sitting in the truck with over 200 possible angles available to him. So, you know, I mean, there's a negative around the game of rugby that it's dangerous and parents don't want their children playing it, but it has never been safer in terms of the amount of people looking at it and the regulations around the game. So that's a flailing hand. I don't think there's any. It's a high shot, but it's not reckless, which warrants a sanction for a red card. It's a yellow card.
Ronan, I think everybody knows Billy Burns after the weekend anyway, and unfortunately it's probably for the wrong reasons. It was really tough outing for him towards the end of the game. That kick got an awful lot of attention. What was your assessment of it?
my assessment was, okay, how I see it, my thoughts on this are, so I don't know how many years ago it was. So the furthest you can get a line out from the line is 5 meters. So automatically for kickers, the goal line or the corner flag is now the 5 meter line, if you follow me, okay? So doing your visualization or your imagery, you have the corner flag is the 5 meter line, okay? Then if you're to use a golfing analogy, the water is from the 5 meter line to where you score a try, which is 5 meters. That's out of bounds for a kicker. It's as we Augusta, it's the water, you're dead, you cannot go there. But you know you have 4.99 meters of space to play with. Before that, you have another 5 meters, which would give you a line out 10 meters out from the line. So in terms of the kicker's range and his visualization, he can go from 5 meters to 5 meters to the line, which is a 10 meter spacing. And that has to be where he hits. He knows if I hit a line out 5 meters out, okay, the line out is 5 meters out, there is absolutely no advantage, as we know, in going 4 meters from the try line. So from what a kicker needs to do, he needs to go, okay, worst case scenario, I give myself or the team a line out 10 meters out. So he knows that he's looking at his target is the new target, which is the 5 meter line from the try line. But also his error rate on the far side of that is plus 4.99 meters to know that if I spray it 5 meters off my foot here, which shouldn't happen, because if you're looking for contact off your foot, 5 meters is still quite a big error rate. But he knows that he has that to play with, but you should never be really counting on that. It's got to be the kind of you happy with the risk reward being 10 meters and obviously 5 meters. Is you can't get a line out 2 meters out from the line, is what I'm trying to explain to you, if you can follow me.
We did. But now that you're a manager, you are a coach, and you experienced disappointment as a player, not same as I did as a jockey, but as a manager, what do you do with Billy Burns between now and next week? How do you get him back up? How do you restore his confidence? What would you do with him?
I'd listen to what he has to say, and then if he was thinking like I was thinking, maybe you don't have to say anything, Ruby, because you know yourself when you mess up what exactly you've done, unless it's incredibly complex, which a lot of sport isn't. Maybe he needs to tell you, and then you go, yeah, I agree with that, but I also think this may be valuable to you going forward. And then you kind of connect with him, you press the reset button, and you get on with it. Because the most important thing is that the greatest challenge for anyone as a sports person is their emotions and how do you get the best out of them. He knows he's messed up, but the thing about good guys is that they respond, they reply. So yeah, he can have a bad night last night, but you'd like to think that he probably went out today and he hit 30 balls to a left hand corner.
Johnny's to have a HIA assessment this week. Would you start Billy Burns next Saturday?
Well, I'd take you back a little bit from that, Ruby. I would, if I was starting him, I would not include that kick in my decision making process. I haven't seen enough of him in training or games for Ulster to decide. I think he's better impact off the bench than Ross Byrne, but I think Ross Byrne would be a better man starting.
Yeah, I get where you're going from.
You know, it's very different, the roles of a starter to an impact sub. I think Ross Byrne's value is very underappreciated in terms of he manages the team very well, epitomised by his performance in Thomond Park when they were 10-6 down to Munster. And I know he came off the bench and it sounds contradictory what I'm saying, but that at test level is Billy Burns is kind of exciting. He's a little bit more tempo. That with Gibson Park works well as a combination, but I think I like the calming influence of a Ross Byrne starting a game.
Rog, we're tight on time. Thanks so much. Really appreciate you taking the call. You were launching Aviva's Safe to Dream campaign, which is an online hub to improve access for young people in their sporting journey, which covers online skills, videos, advice and support from leading ambassadors like Ronan himself. Okay, quick break and we're back.
On the go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We have some fantastic hampers to give away all this week with thanks to our sponsors, Green Farm. Their hampers contain all their products, which are on-the-go chicken ranges. The range includes their chicken bites that come in three different flavours. They're all 100% natural, high in protein, and come with a handy little recyclable skewer so you can eat them anywhere. Yeah, it's well, it's recyclable. I think it's made out of bamboo, which is nice of them. Leaving something behind. Okay, tonight's prize is a fantastic New Year's fitness hamper, and it's full of goodies, stuff like a Fitbit, a dumbbell water bottle. Haven't seen one, but I'd say it is unbelievable, and a goal-setting journal diary. So, and there's also a brilliant speaker so that you can have music on the go as you're working out.
Very good. That's an absolutely fantastic prize. And for a chance to win, all you need to do is answer the following question. After last night, how many Super Bowl rings does Tom Brady have? So text the word green, followed by your answer and name to 51552, and we'll pick a winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for more. We're going to move on to our sporting highlights very shortly, but I just want to pick up on something that Ronan O'Gara said, Ruby. He was talking about trying to pick Billy Burns back up from a coaching point of view this week, which will obviously need to be done because his confidence will be shot after the game at the weekend and also all the attention that came after it. When something didn't go way, your way, Ruby, you had a really big disappointment, or you fell off at a big race. How did you pick yourself back up again?
I always wanted to go straight back out. That, to me, was the only way of putting it right. I hated falling in the last race of the day where I didn't have a chance to ride in the next two. Not good English, right or wrong. I remember when Annie Power fell at the last in Cheltenham, it was the last race I had that day, so I had to wait till the first race tomorrow to go back out and try and ride a winner. I always wanted to put it right. I don't know Billy Burns from Adam, but I imagine if I was him, all he wants to do is get back on the pitch and prove to himself that that was just a mistake. And that's what it is for sports people, to prove to themselves, they all know they're human. I'm talking like as if we all knew we were human, but you just want to eradicate the mistake and move on. That's the way I was about it. Dunica, what about you?
Yeah, and a big thing, Ruby, which I saw were his teammates, you know, because you won't look at his one error. Like Rod said there, Gary Ringrose said there, or as Johnny Sexton had kicking errors, they'll all be reviewed. It's just, unfortunately, for the 10, they're the playmakers, they're the moments, they're the ones that really matter. But yeah, it will be tough for him. It'll be tough for Pete as well, because they were massive moments within the games, and it's amazing. The further you go up, the individual errors really, really count. And you know, the ear is thin up at the top, and you know, if you make mistakes like that, they really do count.
But it doesn't matter how big a team you're part of, you still have to go home that night and look at yourself in your bathroom mirror as you're brushing your teeth and be proud of what you've done. So that's when you want to get rid of mistakes out of your head. No matter what somebody says to you, puts their arm around you or tells you not to worry about it, you want to go and eradicate that mistake yourself. You can't change it, but you want to move forward.
And you have to back it up, don't you? Like, only you can sort it. You know, yeah. It's right and the wrong. So, yeah, but in terms of highlights, Marie, had you one?
I actually did. It was a Super Bowl, and it wasn't because of Tom Brady's remarkable career, but there was a little bit of history made. Assistant defensive line coach Laurie Locust and assistant strength and conditioning coach Marielle Jaffa Defar became the first women coaches to win a Super Bowl after the Buccaneers' 31-9 victory over Kansas City. And also Sarah Thomas made history as the first woman to officiate a Super Bowl. She was working as the down judge, and I have to say, I just enjoyed seeing it happen. Look, there will be a time when these things aren't newsworthy, and I know I keep bringing them up, but I just think it's important to mark these first, because those women got there, but over the years, an awful lot of people blazed trails, broke down barriers, and just, you know, laid down that path so that these women could get there and made so many sacrifices so that they could have these moments and opportunities. So, fair play to all of them.
Yeah, and they were busy, to be fair to them, weren't they? Like, Kansas City Chiefs, we're chatting about indiscipline, but they seemed like they lost it at times. They just got a little bit rattled, and that can happen on the big occasion. They gave away an awful lot of pens.
I barely know the rules of the NFL, so I'm definitely not going to comment on that.
Well, one man that wasn't rattled at the weekend was Willie Mullins.
Oh, yes.
Unbelievable, really.
Absolute bean over weekend. Incredible. Like, he obviously targeted the meeting, Marie, from a long way out. He said he's all his horses revved up for Christmas.
Thanks, Ruby. You could have told us.
And he was targeting here. I did. I think if you wrote them down the other day when you asked me all those questions, you were probably panicking about the next question instead of listening to the answer. But... yeah, his horses were in incredible form, and it was a great weekend's racing, and all the big horses turned up. Even Honeysuckle was breathtaking in the Chanel Farm Irish Champion Hurdle for Rachel Blackmore and Henry de Bromhead. Like, she upped the ante so far from home, and it was a brilliant performance from her. Monkfish appreciated, Enner Gamine, Shaquem Pourceau, you could, the list goes on. Kenboy, Quilixios for Gordon Elliott in the Spring Juvenile Hurdle. It was brilliant racing from start to finish.
Ruby, why would Willie have targeted that one? Is it because it's home and it's, you know what I mean, it's shown the best of Irish, or is it the time to hit your straps and get ready for Cheltenham?
Bit of both, Donica, but the Dublin Racing Festival was an amalgamation of a couple of race meetings that Leopardstown had in the spring, and they put it into one weekend, 2 days racing, and it's big prize money. It's a huge target, and he brought, and people might say, look, it was a tad one-sided, but Willie Mullins brought all his horses to run against each other. Mm. He could have just brought the best one for each race, but he brought the back up. He ran 25 horses on Saturday, 35 on Sunday. He brought as many horses as he could to support the meeting and made them race against each other and face off against each other, and it was great to see.
So who impressed you most?
For me, Monkfish. I think he could be potentially one of the best horses Willie Mullins has ever trained. Enner Gamine was very good, Shaquem Pourceau, but if you're giving me one to take home, it would be Monkfish or Honeysuckle. I thought she was fantastic in the Irish Champion Hurdle.
And Ruby, is there time now to decide where to for those horses? Like, would you look at it now and go, Kenboy, he's definitely going?
I think for, especially for Paul Townend, I'd say it was a great weekend, and not only ride five winners, but he knows what horses now going to Cheltenham he should be riding in each race as well, and it's 5.5 weeks to Cheltenham, so they'll be let down this week, and when the horses are fresh enough, you build them back up to Cheltenham, so that'll be the target. Hopefully everything goes smoothly between now and then, with travelling to the UK, all that has to go on, the quarantine that'll be involved, it'll be a big effort, and it'll be so strict, and it'll all have to be done right, so hopefully that'll go well from here to there.
Donegal, did you have a highlight?
Yeah, Marie, it was the rugby, it was having Six Nations back, and to be fair, it was unfortunate it wasn't in the Irish game. I was very pleased with the performance, though. I thought with 14 men for Ireland to rally like that is really hard. A red card now in rugby means game over, so for them to do quite well, but my highlight was Scotland-England, and it was Short Hogg's performance as a captain. I just thought he was incredible. He was quite Brian O'Driscoll-like in terms of he just stepped up. I thought, everyone talks about Finn Russell, but there was moments where he just ran out the gap and you were going, what's this guy at? And I know everyone goes on that he's an incredible talent and needs to be there around for Lions tours, but in pressure rugby, just that last drop goal with his left, I was like, what's this guy doing? You know, it's just...
What about the trip?
Yeah.
I meant to say it to Rodgers, and even he tried to tackle that.
Yeah, they can have the old revolving door type tattle, but I just thought Short Hogg really stepped up, and everyone, I think the conversation has been led towards the Lions and led by the English media constantly pushing Mauro Atoji, who'll definitely be on the Lions tour, and I think it would be a worthy captain, but I think Short Hogg put his hand up as actual leader. I think he's definitely going to start for Lions, and I thought his performance was incredible.
Donica, just before we head for a break, we spoke so much last week about Ireland's line-out and the potential impact that Paul O'Connell could have. What did you reckon?
Yeah, it was good. It was good, to be fair to it. And I think there's an awful lot of work that'll come, and it will continue to improve. I know this is really harsh, but that last kick, I would love to have seen if we've made that last play what we were going to do, because the backs weren't getting that ball, but I would have thought that Paulie would have had some shift drive or some mechanism to exploit, as Rog said there, you know, that you just need a power play, and he definitely would have done that.
Rog cut the legs out from under me when I tried to say about Ireland holding the ball, but even when you watched from the 78th minute to when to move the ball over and back. I thought that was incredible to watch for 14 men to move it so far up the pitch, so not regimentally, but with a bit flair. I thought it was great to watch.
Yeah, and it was great. And like, to be fair, I know we all look at the line out for Paul, but I think there was evidence that the breakdown was an awful lot better. If you looked at it at the Autumn International, because the focus goes on a different area, the small little things can fall down, and we were getting players getting belly up and stuff. We didn't see this weekend, and you're right, Ruby, I thought there was a greater ball retention, holding on to the ball. We looked really composed with it. But against teams like France and Italy, you're going to run into brick walls, so we need to be a little bit smarter.
Okay, well, Ruby enjoyed that. Ruby, you're right. We'll take a quick break.
Is he ever wrong?
Back with football. FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I'd say Now TV need to rewrite that ad or change it up a bit. It's a little bit outdated, I would say. Stephen Kelly, you're on the line. You called it weeks ago, but it's Man City. They were incredible yesterday.
They were. They were such good value for money. Resourceful, defensively really solid looking. And then when Liverpool made mistakes, they just showed you how to pounce on an error. That's like, it's unbelievable. Teams sometimes let those situations get away from them, but City just pounced, were clinical, finishing one, and just all round performance was one of those. Some standout performances, like the Phil Foden, who was just looking like a really special player, but it was a fantastic performance from that, especially at Anfield.
Stephen, on reflection, you know, it was only a few months ago really that there was questions being asked about Pep Guardiola's brilliance, but it just shows that he can develop an attacking system that flourishes without De Bruyne and Aguero, and he's also tightened up the defence as well, which is no mean feat.
I think for him, the defensive headache has been something that's been plaguing him for a little while now. Last season, it really caused him problems, and that was the first point to try and get right. And this season, they've really done that. They've defensively looked solid, and like I said, they've been building for a while with 1-0 wins and 2-0 wins, and just not conceding many goals. But to think now that they're, I think, 10 goals clear of the nearest team to them. Clean sheets galore. They're just playing really good, solid football, and they think that all of this is without their main striker, and he's been out for so long that they're, you know, the type of football they play, the style they play, and you know, he said some of the stuff that was being questioned about Guardiola being a poor coach and not getting the best of his players, not knowing how to coach his players, was just kind of laughable, because you see the way these players respond to him when they play to him, and it's kind of the same stuff is going to be banded around about Klopp, and he's going to have criticism for it. He's still a wonderful manager, and Liverpool would be much closer to this if Van Dijk was fit, and that's the case of it.
But even I read a book on him when I was away one time, and his mythology in soccer, Guardiola's, and his how he transitioned from a player in Barcelona forward, but what he went to do, and it was all about the press when he hadn't the ball, and even the pressure they put on Alisson yesterday. Like, his first mistake wasn't that bad, but it was the immediate pressure they put on it.
Well, it's the way that, like, he's kind of, there was a 5-second rule people used to talk about, but then Pep kind of revamped that. It was like a 3-second, a 2-second rule. They press so high, so quick. But then not only the press, it's when they get the ball, how often they make the right decision on the first pass when they win it back, and it's a forward pass, and it's an intelligent pass, and it's always accurate, and the players are so well equipped, and as soon as they win it, there's a trigger for someone else then to run off and make an angle, or Sterling does it really well getting at the far post. So it's not just the press, it's when they get the ball back from the press, what they do with it then, and they're just so clinical when they win it high up as well.
We were talking to Ronan O'Gara a little bit earlier about body language and demeanour, and I think Alisson, after that Phil Foden goal, was just sitting on the ground. You just knew that how bad things were. But just a word on Foden. Gary Neville said yesterday that he came of age. There were so many things that he was able to show he could do on the pitch yesterday, but I think it was his decision making that really impressed me about him. For you, what do you think he has, and how good can he be, Stephen?
I think the possibility are endless for this guy. Everything about his game, his work rate, his enthusiasm, those things that you always look for, the underlying talent, and they're there in abundance, and then the talent that goes with it is exceptional. But for me, his ability to find space and turn in tight situations, and then, like you said, the final ball, like, and I think he seems like he's really learned. You know, he hits him like David Silva, and you see glimpses of David Silva in him in his positioning sense and his 1-2s around the area, but then he's got this ability to run at people and take them on, and the way he just touched the ball for the goal was the slightest of touch, and then he just hit it with no backlift. Alisson couldn't even move by the time it was above him. And just to think, honestly, I look at the young players England have coming through at the moment, and it's bewildering to think that they're so talented. They've got so many attacking options. It's staggering.
You obviously played at the top level. You were in an environment, an elite environment. Do the top teams practice their penalties? And what should Man City do to fix that problem?
I don't know. There's rumours going about that Edison's going to be taking the next one. I'm not sure that's a bad idea. To be honest, you don't often practice penalties unless you're going into a game where you know a penalty is going to be a possibility. That's the truth of it. You might have a striker or centre forward or the actual penalty taker that will go after training and hit 4 or 5 every session or every training session, and that would be his loss. But as a team, you don't do it generally as a rule of thumb unless you're going into a game like it's going to be a one-off cup match or something that you know you're going to end that it could go into penalties. But you would think City would just go right. They pick one player or Guardiola. It's not like they're lacking quality or technical ability. These are probably the most technical players in the league, and they think that they don't have someone that can step up and score. And even when you think about it, it can't be down to nerves, because they perform at the highest level and the biggest stage and turn it on when they need to. So it's just something that's missing when it comes to penalties for City. And you know, who knows what it's going to be, but I think you just have to nail a player and say, well, you do it, you're going to take them, you're going to practice them, and you're going to be the one first regardless of what happens.
The camera angle yesterday in Anfield for the penalty when Gundogan missed was incredible. But he didn't just miss, like, it ended up in row 8. To watch where the ball went, it was amazing.
Oh, and of all the players, like, he steps up and, you know, he's the top goal scorer for them. He's flying, everything he's hitting, he's catching really well. Again, another technically really gifted player. And he catches it extremely well, just not on target.
And then Salah probably showed him up then afterwards as well.
Yeah. Exactly. Salah Sandler was wonderful as well. He just steps up cool, calm, and he's back in a good vein of form. It's just the rest of the team around him, we're not performing at the highest level.
Can they get it back?
Not the league. The form, I think they'll get back into it. They're not going to be the juggernaut they once were, just because you can't have the defensive people missing in defence for them and not expect at some point for it to be an issue, especially with the way they play. They're so reliant on playing a high line and energy and keeping the field, and that is heavily reliable, having 2 centre backs that are mobile, quick, read the game well, and there's no one better in the world than Van Dijk at doing that, and he's not there. So we could see there was glimpses of it at times, and they were still hanging on, and it was remarkable that they were still top of the table, but it had to come to a point where it was going to affect them. And the more injuries they've had, the more people have been shuffled around. Henderson, the centre back, you know, he does a really good job there, but he's not the answer. And then you're taking them out of midfield as well, so it's going to be hard for them. They'll be in around there, they'll be top 4 absolutely, but winning the league, I just can't see past City.
So you're obviously 5 points clear of United with a game in hand, but how did United let a 2-goal lead slip on Saturday?
Oh, I know, twice, in front twice. You think that after having the 2-goal lead, being brought back and then getting it going again, and you think, right, that solidifies it, that knocks the cobwebs off, and to concede the way they did in the last minute of the game was really disappointing for them. But it's just that consistency, and it's something that we speak about all the time. It's a word I use on here every week with United, and it looks like they found the level of it, but you just don't know. You never know what's going to happen or when they're going to turn up. And with Fernandes at the helm, they always have a chance. Defensively, they got better over the course of the season. They are still in the hunt. They're the closest team to City, but City still have a game at hand on them. They can go, they can push that to 8 points, and you just feel that you never know. You know, it could go and be remarkable against a really top side, and then they could let it slip against a weaker opposition that they expected to be, and that's just the issues they have at the moment.
I know Olsen slipped for McTominay's goal to put United back in front, but could De Gea have been braver for the Calvert-Lewin goal? Could he got out quicker and thrown himself at it?
I felt he could have probably got there. I felt that was something that maybe he could have just, you know, you know what, I'm gonna make this mine. I'm gonna be imposing. I'm gonna spread myself. I'm gonna get out here. If anything, I'm gonna get close enough to put him off or make him miss it. But he didn't, and you know, Cavalier, it was a good finish from him in the end. But you know, I even think just some of the quotes coming out of the manager as well. You know, he talks about not being in a title race and stuff like that. And I just think for Manchester United, you should just say, listen, we're always in a title race. We expect to be here. We want to be here at this club. We want to win the league. And if we're not in it, we're going to be disappointed. And that's the way they should be thinking.
Once they stay in front of Liverpool and I can be smiling at Marie, that'll do me the finest. Stephen Kelly, thanks a million.
With Green Farm, healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, earlier today, Daniel Kinahan, a Dublin man identified in the High Court in Dublin as a senior figure in organised crime on a global scale, released a statement to TalkSport Radio claiming that he is a legitimate businessman who is not a part of any criminal gang, and he also confirmed that he continues to work in boxing. The statement has garnered a lot of attention, and to tell us why, our crime correspondent Paul Reynolds joins us. Paul, what were the key points in the statement today?
Well, Marie, Daniel Kinahan has always portrayed himself as an independent boxing advisor. And this is the second statement he's issued in 10 days. And there's a lot of stuff in it about him being from Dublin and how he's worked himself up in boxing and his love of boxing. But also the main points really are that he's claiming he's not involved in organised crime. He criticises the Special Criminal Court, which has convicted and jailed a huge proportion of the Kinahan organised crime gang members. He says he's not involved in the threat to BBC reporters, and he himself is a victim of a campaign of vilification. As you say, the statement was issued to TalkSport in the UK, and Kinahan's legal team have confirmed to us that it was prepared and issued by him. He specifically says he's not part of a criminal gang in Ireland or anywhere in the world. Now, this in spite of the fact that two of the highest courts in Ireland have found that he controlled and managed the Kinahan organised crime gang, and that that gang is involved in drug trafficking, firearms offences and execution style murders. Now, Daniel Kinahan has not contested any of these findings in courts in Ireland or elsewhere. And Senior Gardaí have also pointed to the evidence that was given in the courts and that has been accepted by the courts, which is it has proved robust, reliable and dependable. And the Gardaí are also pointing out that at least 65 Kinahan gang members, including Daniel's friends and associates, Freddie Thompson, Liam Brannigan, Thomas Bomber Kavanagh, these people are all in jail today, even though he insisted that he's not a part of a criminal gang anywhere. And the Gardaí also say they're continuing to dismantle the Kinahan organised crime group.
Paul, last summer Tyson Fury posted a video on Twitter confirming the fight between him and Anthony Joshua had been arranged by Daniel Kinahan. A date for this fight is expected very, very soon. Do you think that potential broadcasters are going to be concerned about what is now playing out in the public sphere?
Well, really, the ball is in their court because Kinahan can issue all the statements that he feels he wants to issue. But there's no doubt that the Gardaí are satisfied and the courts are satisfied with the evidence that has been put forward. And it has always been open to Daniel Kinahan to use the courts in this country or indeed in any country if he feels he has been much maligned. I mean, Kinahan's involvement in boxing and the expected world heavyweight title fight between Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua has also been criticised in the Dáil by the government, by opposition TDs and up to the highest levels in government, including the then Taoiseach Leo Varadkar last summer. And as a consequence of that, Kinahan was later dismissed as a special advisor to KHK Sports, which was founded by the son of the ruler of Bahrain. And that just happened 5 days after he had been appointed. And it came following interventions by Irish diplomats in the Middle East. They had been in touch with the authorities there and they had pointed out what was being said and what was found in relation to Daniel Kinahan. Now, Kinahan says today that, you know, he feels he's the victim of a campaign against him. But the Gardaí are saying that the Kinahan organised crime group are actually involved in a campaign of disinformation in relation to what exactly the organised crime group is involved in, and specifically in relation to the murder at the Regency Hotel, which led to an escalation in this ongoing feud. And interestingly as well today, I mean, the Panorama programme has caused major problems for Daniel Kinahan because he may not be concerned about what people in Ireland say about him. BBC and Panorama are a worldwide brand, and the reach of that program has gone global. So it has been the activities of Daniel Kinahan and his links to organized crime have been broadcast all over the world, and more people are now beginning to question his role in boxing. And much of that program was made up of interviews from senior and serving retired Garda officers and journalists in this country. So while much of the information was not new to people in Ireland, it was very new to many people in the UK and worldwide. And as a result of that programme, the PSNI subsequently informed the BBC that there had been a credible threat made against one of the journalists involved in making that programme. Interestingly enough, today Daniel Kinahan came out and denied he had anything to do with this, insisting today that he has never threatened a reporter or journalist or asked anyone to do that for him.
Okay, Paul, thanks so much for joining us. No doubt we'll be talking to you again in some time about this ongoing saga now at this stage. Okay, that is all we have time for. Our competition winner is Emma Rafferty from County Westmeath. We'll be back tomorrow to look ahead to the Champions League. We'll talk golf with Gary Murphy and Cheltenham with Dan Skelton.